Hello and welcome to Think Rant. Today is Thursday the 3rd of November 2011 and I'm your host John Stabler. Joining me this week are my regular co-hosts, Stephen Brett.
Good evening.
And Trevor J. Williams.
Hello.
And that's it. Sorry, there's no funniness this week. I'm just going to do the usual announcements. You can listen to previous episodes by searching iTunes for Think/Rant. While you're there, why not leave us a review? If you prefer to avoid the cult of Apple and listen to us DRM-free, then you can also just go to our blog at thinkrant.blogspot.com and download them directly from the audio archive page there. We usually post unedited podcasts on there after we're done.
Yeah, and it's not edited, though, but because, listeners, did you see the sign out front that said podcast editing? Did you see the sign out front that said podcast editing? No, you know why you didn't see that sign? Because it ain't there. Because editing Think Rant fucking podcast ain't John's business. That's why.
Okay, I've missed the reference again.
Yeah. But I'm not going to use the actual words because they're appalling.
Oh, okay.
But it's from Pulp Fiction.
You see, I don't like that film.
What?
You know, I always upset someone whenever I say that.
Oh, everyone, probably.
God. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
We've only got another 58 minutes to sort you out. Oh, my God.
What, are you just going to sit me down and watch it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Hang on, just let me finish the announcements. If you want, you can get in touch with us using Twitter, at ThinkRant, or you can join the ThinkRant community podcast page on Facebook, or you can email us, info@thinkrant.co.uk. And that is it. For the announcements, so.
Oh yeah, and if you're thinking, fortnightly now, is it? First it was the bins, now it's Think Rant podcast. This is exactly how Nazi Germany started. It's not a regular thing. It's just that sometimes we don't get the chance. We try and do it every week, don't we?
We do try, and to be fair to us, we've been pretty consistent in the past. It's just things have conspired against us lately.
Battlefield 3 being released.
No,
for example.
No, that wasn't the only reason. There were other reasons.
Which, incidentally, I got a date before John got.
Yeah. Okay. Let's not upset me with that. Okay.
I didn't pay any extra for postage either.
No. Well, neither did I because I got a refund. But let's not talk. We don't want to bore listeners with my complaints to Amazon. We want to talk about the
Justin Bieber's baby.
No. Has Justin Bieber got a baby?
Oh, apparently, yeah. Some woman's come out and said that. She and Justin got jiggy when he was 16 years old, which was last year.
Get in.
And has now had his child. Bieber baby. Oh, yeah. There we go.
Okay. Sorry. On to serious news. The offices of French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo in Paris were destroyed in a petrol bomb attack. This is what I thought was the big news of, well, the week.
It is, yeah.
It comes day after the publication. After the publication named the Prophet Muhammad as its editor-in-chief for the next issue, which I thought was quite good. The cover of the magazine carried the character of the Prophet making a facetious comment. Well, I can't remember what the comment was now. It's something like, something about 100 lashes.
It was, on the front page, he says, 100 lashes if you don't die of laughter.
Yeah, that's the kind of threat that you do in your stand-up, isn't it, Trev? He's kind of nicking your material.
Thank you. Thank you very much. There is no threat of physical violence.
Okay.
Not physical.
Just
bit of mental intimidation, mental violence, but that's just fine. It's expected of anything.
So, so what do you think? The French have been defiant in a good way, saying if we can poke fun at anything in France, if we can talk about anything in France apart from Islam, the consequences, that's annoying. So he's basically saying, look, we're going to take the piss out of everything, like it or lump it. And then there was the usual, oh, it's not all Muslims, it is just some extremists, which is stating the obvious. And I hate how people always have to state the obvious on things like that.
Well, Kat, I'll just intercede there. People have to state the obvious on things like that because there are an awful lot of stupid people out there. Yeah. Take, for example, the English Defence League.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you and I are rational people. Yeah. Trev's a rational person. We know that it's crazies. Doing it, not your average normal Muslim.
No,
no, we know it's
it's not the Muslimics.
It's not the Muslimics. We know it's the crazies. Okay. So I think it does need to be reiterated because there's too many stupid people out there who don't know the difference.
It's a good point. Like the people, the regular moderate Muslims who might feel a bit of offence about seeing a caricature. And that's not all of them. It's a certain segment of Islam that have decided this. Those ones who are still offended but aren't going to set fire to anything, I do feel sorry for them. But because there are some mental extremist ones, it has to be done.
This is true.
And damn them, those extremist Muslims, damn them, they're making me envy the French.
Yes.
How dare they?
Because you know what they did as well, those bloody French, you know they went and did afterwards as well? They went and reprinted the cartoons again.
The 16 original cartoons.
Yeah, yeah.
To find. And it was nice to see what was usually a competitor to the publication offering to use their printing services while they get back on their feet again, so that they can continue publishing, which is a nice bit of solidarity from the French press there.
Yeah, it is a bizarrely typical French thing. You're my competitor and I'll happily see you go under. Wait a second, is France saying, piss off to the rest of the world? You can use my presses.
Yeah. In some ways, I hate to say it, but I actually admire the French in their, their attitude. You know, these are our ideals, we're going to stick by them, and if you don't agree, then fuck you. You know, I kind of like that.
In this, I'm totally in admiration and awe of them. But with them thinking that Roman Polanski is a sexual adventurer, I don't so much.
No, but
I'm not really on board with that one.
No, me neither. Steve's got a cough this week.
I have
week,
a cough
so,
this week, I do apologise.
So if you hear him coughing, what we'll just do is we'll just stop, let him finish, and then we'll just again, you know, and I'll just edit it out, as opposed to keeping
as
on
if.
Talking.
As
yeah?
If.
Yeah, no, seriously. Cool. So that was my first story. Someone else have a go.
Oh, I just wanted to add, for those people who think that the firebombing was earned because they're just having a go, you can hold sacred whatever you want. And you can tell us that, and then maybe we'll behave with moderation when circumstances allow towards your beliefs. But if you tell us that we can't do it, then of course we're gonna. But it's very easily settled. If what you believe is true, then pray to Allah for divine retribution. And surely your faith is so strong that you know the heretics will be punished. Allah doesn't need the cowardly intervention of some whiny prick with a petrol bomb, does he?
This is true. He speaks the truth. Okay. Let's, Steve, you seem to be focusing.
I'll try and find some stories.
You're looking at porn again. Sorry, okay,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right, Trev.
Hey, a space crew returned to Earth after a mission to Mars just the other day. Did
really?
You hear about this? An 18-month voyage that actually went nowhere.
I very briefly saw a headline on this earlier today.
Hang on a second. Are you telling me that they sent someone to Mars, but they didn't make a... You know, they didn't tell us anyone was going to Mars?
They were going to send someone to Mars.
Oh, they're going to. So they didn't actually get off the launch pad then? Okay.
Well, no. They thought, let's find out first if a crew can spend just 500 days together with everything they would have on a mission to Mars. Get everything done and not kill each other.
Mm.
Let's just check that human beings are capable of that before we put them all in a rocket and waste all that fuel. And they've done it.
Oh,
yeah.
Great.
500 days in a windowless isolation chamber simulating a mission to Mars. They simulated absolutely everything. They talked to their loved ones, and as they got further away, they time-delayed the messages.
Oh, cool, yeah.
It was very, very good.
Did they, the simulation, was it even so accurate that when they got there, there was a woman with three breasts?
That's right.
And a man with a thing living inside him, a symbiote.
Quarta. Yeah.
Yes.
Which, and they are remaking that movie. Can you
true.
Believe it?
Some things don't need to be remade.
Yeah, this is true. And, okay, I'm just going to squeeze this in here, and then, sorry, you can continue, Trev. But... I didn't know this. Did you know that Minority Report is actually a sequel to Total Recall?
Didn't know it was a sequel to Total Recall.
Yeah, it was originally, the script was written as a sequel. It was meant to happen on Mars, and it was going to be a sequel. But it was rewritten in the end for Tom Cruise.
Was Total Recall written because Minority Report, I may be wrong here, I'm maybe getting my wires crossed, wasn't that written by Philip K. Dick?
It is. They're both dick books. Yeah.
Okay. Well, because I haven't read the books, I couldn't comment. But
there you go. But I just... can you believe it?
Because Minority Report was a new short story anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think,
So, sorry, Trev, carry on. You know, Total Recall, had to go out on a bit of a tangent there.
No, fair enough. It was just that what seems, on the face of it, a colossal waste of time is actually a brilliant idea, and I'm chuffed that they managed to do it.
I'm kind of glad that they check these things out, you know, that they're not that cavalier, that they just chuck a bunch of people in a big rocket, chuck in some Snickers bars and say, see you on the other side. You know,
come on, where's the frontier spirit?
Yeah, you know, they do. It's nice to see that there's some level-headed people saying, let's just test these people psychologically first. So are they saying that these people that have undergone the test, are they actually the candidate astronauts, or are they just looking at it in a general sense at the moment?
They are astronauts, but I don't know if they are actually candidates for the proper mission.
No, that's very interesting.
But yeah, they need to do stuff like this, because if they had filled up one of the rooms with pot noodles and then realised they didn't have a kettle, then, you know, that would be a nightmare.
You know, these are things that you forget.
That's right.
The number of times, you know, you think, oh, I'll have some cereal when I get to work, and you take the cereal and you realise there's no milk there. You know, it's
nightmare.
Someone has to think of these, so... Steve?
Well, it's kind of a non-story, but it's just something I want to rant about because, well, Trev's got his Catholic story every week. I've got my Richard Littlejohn story every week.
Okay.
I mean, that's all I can say.
Every week, Steve?
Well, okay, not every week. Just when he really does write drivel. Well, which is most weeks.
So every week.
Yeah. He must have just had absolutely nothing else to write about this week because he has spent a whole column whinging about ducks. And feeding ducks.
Really?
Yeah, really, really.
Does it irk him?
It does irk him. What irks him is some official telling a mum and son out on a lovely bonding day, feeding the ducks with their lovely white bread. Some official comes saying, do you know what? White bread's not really good for them. If you want to feed the ducks, maybe try coming back with some grain, or maybe try some wholemeal bread.
Right.
Right? No, this apparently has become, you know, like just a...
All over the country now.
How very dare he? How very dare he? What an officious little prick. How dare he come up to them and say, stop feeding them this white bread and must give them grain. Whatever is the world coming to?
So
yeah, that's his most important issue of the week.
Yeah. So according to him now, we're banned from feeding ducks white bread all over the country.
Well, pretty much, yeah. That's kind of where he goes along with it, you know. It's unhealthy plying ducks with white bread, and damn it, it never did his ducks any problem, so why should it do any trouble to these other ducks? I mean, you know, one of the lines, I mean, this is just trying to find, right, okay, I've got to read this out to you, because it's just so out of proportion to the story, right? Unless I've missed something, the parks aren't littered with the corpses of ducks who've gorged themselves on sliced bread. If ducks really are being wiped out by white bread, the duck ponds of Britain should look like a bad day on the beaches of Normandy. Sorry, but, you know, it's just... I know I'm kind of maybe giving it some credence here because I'm actually talking about a non-story, but I just can't believe... They have devoted so many column inches to this. It's just nothing.
Next to you, he's probably saying that Hoovers are going to be brought up on genocide charges or something
like that. Oh, probably. No. Oh, actually, do you know what? It's funny you should say that. Have you read this article yet?
No, I haven't.
Right. I'm just going to read it. And where does Hoovers fit into the equation? Thumbs up or thumbs down? Call the duck hotline. So, do you know what I mean? It's just... There's
brilliant
two things here. What you've got is you've got a park gamekeeper has said to a woman, you can't feed the ducks. Just, do you know what? That bread isn't really good for them. Maybe you could possibly bring this next time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, as a park gamekeeper, he is partly responsible for the welfare of those ducks. And, you know, if they are gorging on white bread, which... We know from feeding birds in our own back gardens, white bread isn't necessarily good for birds because it swells in the stomach. It doesn't actually have a nutrient value for them. Then, you know, maybe he's got a point. And, you know, what is wrong with giving...
Because you're ruining Little John's day.
Oh, precisely. I mean, he's just so... so upset by this. It's just it's absolutely ridiculous.
But he's right. It is just like warfare for the ducks. White bread is like being shot.
John, I could just see it now. The ducks
like
are there.
Being shot with a bullet.
And you've got the kids.
That's clearly the case.
The kids stood on the shore with their machine guns, and the ducks are trying to get up the beach. They're there shooting them down with white bread.
And a duck has its wing blown off, and then it disorientated goes and picks its wing back up, and
it was carnage, absolute carnage.
Wow.
So yeah, sorry. Are you
imagining some kind of Saving Private Donald?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and also, there's a bit of casual racism in there as well in his next part, because he's gone about the duck, and then he goes on about his friend having difficulty getting his local Vodafone dealer in North London. So his friend phones a helpline and asks the nearest location near the shop. The voice says to him, it's Northampton, and this guy's in London. So he's saying, it's more than 50 miles away. And the guy says, that's what it says on the list. Where am I speaking to? He asks. Egypt, the voice says. So, you know, the casual racism here is directed towards Egyptians, because obviously Egyptians can't read information which is given to them off a computer, evidently, is what he's suggesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well done, little John.
The interesting thing here...
Absolutely. Quackers.
Shit.
Well, incidentally, that's not mine.
Stay
I robbed that off him.
No, I
robbed it off him because that's how he finishes his story.
Oh, right, okay. But for me, the unbelievable thing about this is this guy, okay, has a prime column in a major newspaper with which he can, you know, yeah, looking at this, it's a full column dedicated to these ducks. And not being funny, just think how much good you could do with a column.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, what else is going on in the world at the moment that, you know...
I mean,
he talked
about Egypt at the end. He could have said something about that, really.
Well, precisely. You know, about the regime change there and how human rights and Islam being, you know... Oh, hang on, it's a Daily Mail. They don't care about human rights, do they? My mistake.
Human rights, yeah. I'm surprised he didn't get elfin safety involved in the duck thing.
Well...
Oh, it's just the sloppy kind of thinking that annoys tits off me. If you read that and you accept what he says, the logic of it, then because McDonald's isn't littered with the bodies of children, it must be good for you.
Yeah.
They're not dead, so fine.
It's good for you. Yeah. Okay. Well, at this point, since we've done a story each, I'm going to jump in, and at this moment in time, I'm going to introduce our regular feature, Spot the Fake. Are you all feeling lucky this week now?
I don't need to feel lucky, John. I just feel you know.
Okay. It's your turn for a Dawkins impression.
What?
Are you feeling lucky, punk? The Clinton Dawkins thing.
Oh, no. We're not going to do that again.
No.
Here's the three stories, and I apologise that they're slightly verbose, but I had to do them justice. Here we go. Story number one. An American multi-billionaire, philanthropist, and experienced sailor was left red-faced with anger and embarrassment as his yacht sank beneath the waves only a mile outside of Gibraltar Harbour. Brandon Holt, age 38 and one of the co-founders of the Ennis Holt Merchant Bank, had recently fitted out the $21.6 million boat and was on a practice leg of a round-the-world coastal navigation challenge. Local media reports claim a group of monkeys had hijacked the vessel, cast it off, and managed to activate the motor and computerized autopilot. Holt accompanied coastal rescue services in pursuit of the runaway boat, only to see it turn sharply a mile ahead of them and capsize. None of the Barbary macaques survived. Holt was too distraught to comment initially, but was later quoted as taking full responsibility for the event and the death of the monkeys, blaming himself for not securing the boat properly. Local authorities have admitted a considerable pest problem, with bands of monkeys regularly raiding and looting moored boats and ships, but countermeasures have been an abysmal failure. Current advice is to make sure your boat is locked, securely moored, and no food items or alcohol left on deck. Now, alcohol, yeah. Yeah, I love that story because of the monkeys last week, you know, the homicidal monkeys, so...
Yeah.
And this is clearly a murder-suicide pact. Maybe luckily... Jessica Fletcher was visiting the...
Second story. Zimbabwean geez. Man collared having sex with a donkey sensationally claimed the object of his affections was actually a prostitute who mysteriously metamorphosed into a hot piece of ass. According to a local report, 28-year-old Sunday Moyo was cuffed after a couple of cops found him making the beast with six legs in his yard, some 180 miles southwest of Harare. Appearing before Magistrate Mildred Mutavu on a bestiality rap, Moyo fessed up to asinine rumpy pumpy, but explained, "Your Worship, I only came to know I was being intimate with a donkey when I got arrested. I had hired a prostitute and paid $20 for the service at downtown nightclub, and I don't know how she became a donkey." The magistrate was unimpressed. He ordered Moyo to be remanded.
They don't tell you the donkeys when I go there.
He ordered Moyo to be remanded in custody.
The donkeys when they start.
And examined by two government psychiatrists.
I had to pay double for that kind of donkey.
And the final and third story. A Northern Ireland man has been jailed for 3 months for causing £3,000 of damage to his flat after attempting to turn his own feces into gold using an electric heater. Paul Moran, 30, admitted arson, endangering the lives of others, the Belfast Telegraph reports. He will spend 12 months on licence upon his release. The would-be Dumbledore apparently used an electric heater in his flat in a misguided attempt to turn his own crap and other waste products into noble metal in July last year. However, rather than uncovering the secrets of transmutation, his experiment necessitated a visit from the fire brigade and caused significant damage to his housing executive flat. A copper at the scene apparently heard Moran referring to putting fertilizer on a heater, which is sort of correct if you look at it like that. Judge McFarlane told Moran, "It is an interesting experiment to fulfill the alchemist's dream, but it wasn't going to succeed." So there's a judge there who knows that alchemy's not real. So, are we going to go for story number one, hot ass? Story number two. Story number one.
With the murder-suicide monkey.
Pirate.
The pirate monkeys. Story number two. Story number two, hot ass. Or story number three, Northern Ireland alchemy. So, this week, is it you're going first this week now, Steve?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
I think it's you.
Okay. See, I wouldn't be surprised by the first. Where was it set again?
It was Gibraltar Harbour.
Oh, sorry. The hot piece of ass. Where was that
hot
set?
Hot ass, Zimbabwe. Harare area.
You see, I kind of wouldn't be surprised by that because there's been a lot of crazy stories, haven't there, about shape changes coming out of Africa recently. Like, you know, a man marrying a goat and that because it was his ex-wife or something. So that obviously has a real ring of plausibility about it because that's kind of a defence and a story that has come out of Africa a couple of times. The pirate monkeys, I just want to be true. Because I think that's amazing. To be honest with you, I would pay good money to watch YouTube footage of that.
I'd just like to make clear, they didn't sail the boat out, okay? Because I wanted to make... I thought I made it clear when I retyped the story, but I want you to know that they didn't sail the boat. They just unmoored it, and it was on autopilot.
Yeah, you shattering my dreams here. I've got pictures of a pirate monkey captain stood at the helm, army hearties, and all the pirates running up and down their rigging.
I don't know, it says yacht. I don't know if there was rigging. You know, it may not have been one of those.
You're spoiling my dream. Sorry. The peg-legged pirate monkey captain. And the final story, I'm going to say the final story is fake, only because I can't believe there's a judge out there who doesn't believe in alchemy.
What? They're not all that old.
Because they're
and
all
out
crazy.
Okay. So Steve's going for the shit on a heater. Trev.
Okay. Right. Well, the thing about the monkeys, I think, is that might be too preposterous for you to have made up, and I do love it. I just love the idea of them being led by, like, two of them, the leaders of that pack, just saying at some point, "We're going to need a bigger boat." Oh, look at that one! the one with the axe. Oh, dear. I was thinking of doing an awful joke. You ought not to have done that.
Oh,
very
Trev.
Poor. Very poor. But I think that that's the one you made up.
Okay.
Because shit on a heater, it's just, it's unspectacular, strangely. It's bizarre, but not spectacular. And there were too many things that you were just chuffed about with the beast with six legs, which is good stuff. I love that. But I think that you're too proud of that middle story. That's what I think.
Okay, so you're both locked in then.
Yep.
Steve's going that I've tried to do a boring kind of like science-y transmutation.
No, not at all. No. It's a good story. It literally is a fact. I can't believe there's a judge out there who doesn't believe in alchemy. Okay. They're probably all practicing themselves in their back chambers.
Okay.
Literally, if you're going for feces.
Yeah. Well, I'll go for that. We'll go with Steve's story first. Unfortunately, that's a true story. A man did try to transmutate shit and other waste products into gold. And now, Trevor, hot ass.
Ooh.
It's a true story, which means I win yet again. I made up the monkey story because I loved monkeys so much from last week. I had to have them stealing a boat. It was...
Okay. Can I just pause for a second?
Yeah.
In the last episode, there's a quote of you saying, "Who's that ginger wanker?" I want to put out a call to any listener who's got experience in editing and music. If they could put that to music, "Who's that ginger wanker?" from John, that would be wonderful. He has just said, was it? I love monkeys. I couldn't resist them.
Oh, so you're just hoping that by the end of next year, I'll have said so many strange...
It's like Shakespeare. Monkeys fighting Shakespeare.
Yeah, eventually you'll be able to have me confessing to...
murdering JFK.
And Gary Glitter's crimes and things like that. And yeah, okay, great. So I'm sorry, guys, but yet again, you were fooled. Much as you wanted the monkeys to be true. I want the monkeys to be true. But unfortunately...
Can we make it so?
Unfortunately, they were a manufactured band, and it was never going to be true.
Yeah, so sorry about that. Okay, well, guys, somebody else carry on. They'll both jump up at the same time.
Okay. Okay. Ralph Fiennes was banging on about something. He was saying that short words are dumbing down language, and text speak, and the fact that kids. Relate to each other with the same words over and over again means that there's a dumbing down going on in society.
Sorry, Trev, can I just stop you there? Was that Ralph as in Ralph Fiennes or Ranulph?
Spelt Ralph.
No, we are talking Ralph. Yeah, that's fine. I wasn't sure if you'd said Ranulph or Ralph, you see, so that's just wanted to have.
The intent you tried to.
Is it the actor or the adventurer?
Hmm. Okay.
But you're talking about the actor.
He calls himself Ralph. I'm yet to be convinced. But I realise, you know, he could spell it Gordon and pronounce it Ralph. It's his name. He can do whatever he wants with it.
This is true.
Fair enough. It's just that the L seems to be, I don't know, taking the piss. Like as if he's testing people.
You know, there's certain
letters.
My
name's Ralph. Really? You sure?
How do you spell
it?
Says
that? Ralph, yeah.
Yeah. I love it how, you know, some letters, you know, you can accept being silent. But now there's this new fashion of making any letter silent. So yeah carry on, dude. So he's not happy.
He was basically doing the tried and tested thing of saying everybody's getting thick, everything's dumbing down, nobody's as clever as they used to be. And Shakespeare used all these long words, and that's has yet to be bettered. And there was a brilliant piece by Michael Rosen in The Guardian on Monday. Where he spent quite a long time discussing language and the use of it and how it's the meanings attached to words that are important. And while Shakespeare is brilliant, he manages to pretty much take apart Fiennes' argument without using a word of more than two syllables. And he explains it at the end, written with words of one or two syllables, apart from the word syllable used here. And it's the kind of thing you don't notice as you're going through. It sounds like perfectly intelligent.
Oh, so it's written well then, yeah.
Yeah, well, of course, it's Michael Rosen. He's brilliant.
Of course. And the interesting thing, of course, is that Shakespeare actually made up a lot of our language. They were new words.
Yeah.
So using Shakespeare as an example of how, you know, we should be speaking is kind of weird. And also, you know, kids using words, you know, shortened words or whatever... Slang has been around forever, and there's nothing new about it. It was happening in the 50s, it was happening in the 20s, it's always been happening. So slang is actually an enrichment of our language, and it adds to it rather than detracts. So yeah, I agree with you, Trev. He's basically just trying the old canard of, oh, everything's going to shit, without actually looking at the facts.
Yeah. I talk posh. Nobody else does. So I have to try and justify my talking posh.
So
there's all sorts of things that I'll bang on about trying to defend language, and I'll yell and rant as loud as I possibly can. But that, even though I say, I'm right and this is the right way to do it, that doesn't mean any of what I say is actually true. But the louder I shout it, the more likely it is to become true.
I kind of agree with Stephen Fry, because he, although he's a lover of the language, he says, you know, we can't be stuck in the past. We've got to move with the times. That is how languages evolve, or otherwise they become dead. And I agree with that. What I defend is using language, not necessarily properly in a technical term, but actually, you know, conveying a message and making sure the message is understood, rather than being, I don't like ambiguity in language.
Yeah.
It's there to convey a message, and I think if you're going to convey a message, do it properly.
And let's be honest, there are enough words in the English language to convey a message.
Yeah, well, there's a lot. And that's why I value punctuation, because punctuation can give text a lot of meaning and context. So, and there's a lot of people saying, oh, everyone's dropping the apostrophe. Well, I don't necessarily have a problem with dropping the apostrophe. I think that it actually has a useful function, and so that's why I'd keep it, rather than just because we've always used it, and so we should keep on using it.
Yeah, if the sentence quite clearly makes it plain what you're talking about, that one thing possesses another thing, and you miss out the apostrophe, that's fine. As long as the meaning of the sentence is conveyed quite easily, I've got no problem. I'd rather see that than a possessive apostrophe put into carrots outside a greengrocer.
True.
Because that just makes me want to weep.
That makes me want to not buy
little
any
Jaspers.
Carrots.
Yeah. The carrots what? What belongs to the carrots that you're selling?
So, Steve, you were spying something, or do you want me to carry on?
No, you carry on.
Okay, good, because I'm going to go and bash a bishop. Not just any bishop.
Okay, we'll...
Yeah, we'll wait for you here. no, this is Archbishop of York, John Centamu, am I pronouncing?
Centamu, yeah.
He had a little say-so in the Lords. Apparently, we need to cover spiritual health on the NHS bill that's currently been debated in the Commons, in the upper chamber.
Grief.
Have you heard this?
I haven't heard anything about that. Oh,
okay.
My God.
So, he's a doctor, so he's claiming that his...
Yeah, but is he a medical doctor, then?
I think he is. Basically, there's a National Health Service Bill for England, which has been passed through, and he wants an amendment on there so that he can cover spiritual health. I'm one of those who believe that human beings are psychosomatic spiritual entities. What that means, I'm not sure. And basically, he says, when he told the story... Now, this is actually, you know, in the Lords now. He told the story of how he freed the spirit of a young girl left petrified by seeing a goat sacrificed.
Oh, no.
During a debate on the amendment, he says, illness can be physical or mental, but it can also be spiritual. Well, I won't go with it. The rest of the story is you know...
Just as much gibberish as you've already said?
Yeah, it's basically the story of this girl who was taken to a witch's coven, okay, and watched a goat being slaughtered. But that wasn't the interesting part of the story for me. So it's, you know, for me, this is a case of, well, we're only just winning the battle on getting homeopathy unfunded, and now we've got people in Lords trying to tack on legislation which will give people spiritual health.
Sorry, he's a doctor of theology.
He's a doctor of theology, okay. Yeah. So he's, you know, trying to just...
Oh, well, no one.
But, and there was a comment on this, which I'll paraphrase, but I thought it summed up my feelings on it, which is that there's already various places you can go to get spiritual healing. We don't need to bring it into the hospitals. We're already making massive cuts to the NHS. We don't need to be diverting funds to woo. So that's all I've got to say on it.
I totally agree with you. To be honest with you, I've said before, I know Trev said it before as well, I think that, you know, as you just quite rightly said, we talk about cuts to the NHS budget. We talk about cuts in terms of level of care we can give. And whilst, you know, he has a point to an extent about the, for instance, the woman, girl who saw the goat sacrificed.
Hmm.
I would say that's psychological damage, and so she needs psychological treatment.
Well, yes. According to him, later in the article, he says that she went to see psychologists, but they didn't help her. But apparently, him preying on her and giving her a candle, a few days later, they phoned him up and told her she got better.
And he also farted out an invisible rainbow. Brilliant. So, well done.
You know,
what other imaginary things did you do that day?
Yeah, you know, quite possibly would have helped her. I would be more inclined, though, to go down the more traditional route of saying...
She just got better after a while? Time is a great healer,
probably helped her out.
Yeah.
And probably would help her out. And I think that is the type of thing we should be investing money in. And something which can actually help people.
Not candles.
Not candles.
Well,
not sugar pills.
What he did might have actually really helped the girl, but he didn't help her spiritually, he helped her psychologically.
Yes, exactly.
And it could have been placebo, which, people think that just because you're rational about something that you're dismissing the placebo effect. No, it's an amazing, incredible thing.
Well, it's a real thing. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It exists. So,
I'm with you. I think, you know, you're quite right. We shouldn't be diverting
funding stuff like that.
Money away from real treatment.
I do want to apologise as well. I realise I sounded very dismissive a little while ago when you said he's a doctor of theology, and I went, nah, that explains it. But I was just thinking, if he was an actual doctor, surely he would know about, results and tests.
No. Trev, there's real, there's people who are qualified MDs out there who are trying to sell homeopathy. So I know, I don't buy that either. So there you go.
Did anybody see in the Guardian on Monday and on their website some of the most ridiculous stuff I think I've read for quite a while from a religious apologist? A guy said, religion answers the factual questions science neglects. In the process of this thing, he says, a huge number of factual claims are not scientifically testable. There are no history laboratories. Much history, like much religion, is evidence-based, but the evidence is not scientifically tractable. Not all facts are scientific facts. The claim that I was in Oxford last night, unseen by anyone, will occur in no scientific paper, but it is a hard fact. So it is with the miracles of Jesus, with the creation of the cosmos, and with its end. There are just so many problems.
Yeah, I mean, even if you just... It's not even like a technical kind of philosophical argument. It's just wrong at the end of the day. Sorry, who was this? I've read about it, but in a different context. It wasn't The Guardian.
Hang on a second, I'll see if I can get back to the link.
I think Peasy did a takedown of this. So. I can already tell you that this is on Feringula, with a pretty thorough takedown of the nonsense. It was basically saying, well, it was almost saying, well, we don't know nothing, so just, you know, go with whatever you make up. Doesn't matter. Just go with that.
He's got this idea that science is just some weird blob out there that thinks about things for a bit and then goes, bing, this thing is true.
And yeah,
it isn't. It's a consensus based on the preponderance of the evidence. And his claim about what you did last night, that is scientifically testable. You amass some evidence until it leans in one direction or another. You could have hallucinated going to Oxford last night.
And also, this is the battle of people. He obviously believes that in this concept of absolute truth, which is, I would argue, it's actually incoherent completely with reality. He's just barking mad, basically. There you go.
Yeah, but it's quite good when somebody comes up with this concept of absolute truth, because they usually start with something like, well, the sky's blue, quite clearly, look at it. Oh dear,
what have you done? But we won't explain that, because we may as well just have an argument about free will, because it's about as interesting.
Primary and secondary qualities, that would be another hour that I'm sure would be fantastic.
Yeah, I'm sure, riveting. I'm still trying to get back the listeners we lost after the free will debate.
I'm so sorry.
We were on a run. No, it was my fault. It was my idea. Philosophy. It is the most geeky. Forget video games. Forget trains. Forget stuff like that. philosophy is the geekiest subject in the world because you give a damn about stuff that people just don't give a fuck about, really.
Well, it's a study of the stuff that the cleverest people in history got wrong. That's entertaining. It's good stuff.
It is, it is. But you got to be careful because then you get all the postmodernists jumping all over that, telling us how science is completely useless. Because fuck the microchip. We might be wrong. It might not actually work.
Yeah, yeah. Don't get out of bed in the morning. What's the point? Maybe the Matrix has you.
Ah, back to the Matrix. Okay.
Oh, me and my boy watched that last night. Brilliant.
The first one?
Yeah.
I watched it a couple of months ago and it's kind of disappointing.
Really?
What? Yeah, when you watch it
Did you take a break? Or did you watch it right through?
No, I'm a big fan of sitting through things. I've got to watch it in one sitting.
Because, you know, the directors thought that they were like a slice of fried gold afterwards, and everything that they turned their hand to was going to be brilliant. And the sequels clearly proved that they weren't.
Correct.
It's quite obvious what the hero of the original Matrix film is, the editor rather than the director.
This is
the
true.
The way the bit at the end, the way that it's cut, so that you're thinking, oh my god, it's going to end any second, oh my god, and you hardly breathe for about 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, wonderful. I think that was a great thing. The second film, Reloaded, although as an action film, I thought it was a good action film, it wasn't what I would call the spiritual successor to the first film.
I don't think enough action films have lots and lots of sequences of two people sitting down opposite each other using very, very long words that the scriptwriter doesn't understand.
We need
there
more
should be
of that.
More.
Steve, are you going to go all highbrow on us now?
No, not at all. I'm just with you. I'm trying to think of something else I can add to this conversation about The Matrix, because I love the first film. I think The Matrix, the first film, is fantastic. I think it's a great piece of cinematography. I mean, you remember that, you know, in terms of what they were doing with the camera was completely different to what we see before, you know, the whole bullet time thing and all that. That was all created by The Matrix. That was the first time it was put into a mainstream film. You know, absolutely fantastic. Yeah, always try to forget that the second two ever existed. Because
no, I'll always watch Reloaded if it's on telly. I gotta watch it.
Really?
Yeah, because I like it. Just,
oh, it's just drivel,
oh,
John.
Oh, no, the Agent Smith fight is so cool with loads of Agent Smith.
Yeah, but it just gets boring because then, oh, hang on, he's fighting Agent Smith and all the clones again. Oh, and now he's fighting somebody else again. And he's fighting Agent Smith again.
Now he's fighting the ghostly truck.
No, come on,
look,
yeah.
There are some good fight scenes in it, but they're too long and too many.
No, the problem is lack of peril, okay? And this is the problem. With Neo, because he's so awesome, there's no peril for him, is there?
Spotted.
You know, you don't feel... I like the Agent Smith for the special effects, like the multiples of him and all the cool stuff. But I didn't feel that because there's no peril. However, there's peril with Morpheus.
I just get bored with Neo when he's, you know... gets the pole, dances around the pole, kicks him in the face, shrugs them all off. Oh, there's hundreds of them all on his back. Oh, I'm going to fly and take off. Why didn't you just fly and take off in the first place, you fucking nonce?
Because he thought he could take them, you know?
But that soon became evident after about, 30 seconds of the fight.
Okay, but what about, maybe it's not a problem with the scene, maybe it's a problem with the production. You know the bit where that Agent Smith jumps down and then he smacks him with a pole?
Yeah.
They should have had the baseball sound.
Stuff
like that, you know. Put a bit of humour in there, maybe.
Yeah, that might
so
be
So I'm going to write a letter to the Wachowski brothers tonight now. Need to re-release it, like, digital, Blu-ray format, but you need to add these things.
They could have just rewritten. A bit of editing and rewriting in the third film could have cast a whole new light on the second film. Because you know when they're in the real world and Neo manages to bring down one of those...
The bad guys, because he uses
his powers outside of the Matrix, and you think, what's going on? Is he still inside the Matrix somehow, and they're tricking him, which would have been a fantastic way.
No, Trev, no.
No, he's some special electro Jesus. Great.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but the whole, whole sacrifice thing as well, I was like, by the end of it, I was just throwing up.
He's the saviour because there's a prophecy. The prophecy was made by a computer program inside the Matrix. So if it all was happening inside the Matrix, it works. But how is a computer program inside the Matrix creating or being able to see the fact that there's some super electro Jesus who's about to go dancing around the place? It just makes no sense. They shat all over their first film.
You're going a bit existential now, Trav. You're going a bit too deeper, you know?
And not just that, but, you know, free will. Just, you know. Let's remember free will, people. You know, if you got prophecy and it's going to happen, none of these people had any free will anyway. What's the fucking point?
Prophecy is one of the laziest devices in fiction.
It is a lazy device, and I hate to see it, you know. I'm not against sci-fi or fantasy, but I'm not a fan of prophecy.
Wouldn't it have been so much better if they'd said all the way along, Neo, you are the chosen one, and then he and everyone else died? That would have been great.
Yeah, we need more films where the bad guys win as well. I've said that before.
I'm with you on that as well.
So
Empire Strikes Back.
Seven.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I can't think.
Seven is genius.
Memento. Kind of.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of. Brilliant. I don't know what to take away from that. I might need to watch it again. Okay, right, we've done our... Go on, Steve.
No, I'm done on that subject. I was just going to...
No, highbrowers, come on.
No, I can't highbrow you. I'm reading from the Daily Mail.
Ugh.
Apparently, Europe wins, Greece and democracy both lose. So I'm guessing from the headline, what they're saying is that all the talk of having a Greek referendum on the European bailout has now gone out of the window, and there is going to be no referendum in Greece, and they're going to just accept the... package as offered to them. But
sorry.
Obviously that's the end of democracy.
Sorry, are they defining...
So basically what they're saying is the elected government of Greece, who've been elected to make decisions and have therefore made decisions, are now undemocratic because they're not allowing a referendum.
So what they're saying now is they're redefining democracy to mean, you know, voting like an X Factor.
They're probably doing that. It was the birthplace of democracy, and now it has died.
Well, that would be almost clever, Trev. No, they haven't done that. It's just literally right. Europe wins, Greece and democracy lose.
But it doesn't, because that idea for a referendum was announced almost emperor-like by Papandreou to the surprise of every bugger.
Yes, exactly.
And even the one guy unilaterally deciding is not democracy.
This is true.
No, I mean, this is one of those things which just winds me up, yeah? Because obviously what the Mail are referring to there is the fact that there's been no referendum on Europe in the UK. Well, no, because there doesn't actually need to be a referendum because we have elections every 4 years.
Hmm.
And we elect our government based upon that information, you know, based upon what they say they're going to do for us and what they're doing. And, you know, if you're going to have a referendum on every single subject... What's the point of having a government?
And the thing is, I mean, let's look at it realistically, talking about Europe and a referendum. The main right-wing party, okay, its policy is to stay in the EU. Tories, on a whole, want to stay in the EU. It's only these fringe UKIP and BNP parties.
Well, no, I mean, I think the majority of... Not majority, but a lot of the Tory backbenchers as well want out of Europe, because I think a lot of them just genuinely believe the crazy rhetoric... which is spouted, you know, about how bad Europe is for us because they make us have straight cucumbers.
Yeah, that's backbenchers. I'm saying the Tory policy is to stay in Europe. That's my point. So, fine. Backbenchers always do stupid things. They've always got crazy ideas.
I know, it's mental. But yeah, I hate this thought that because we haven't had a referendum on the European Union, then somehow it's undemocratic.
No, exactly.
I mean, don't get me wrong, there are things about the European Union I would like to change. For one thing, I'd like to produce audited accounts, which they've never done. But, you know, that would be nice to see and nice to have. But on the other hand, I think you can't deny the benefit of Europe, where we are living in South Wales, in terms of the amount of funding we've received from European Objective 1. Okay, that's dried up now since poorer states have joined the EU. But, you know, before...
We're in a bigger, better position.
We're in a much better position after the Tories rogered us by pulling all the investment out when they closed all the mines. You know, it's the European Union who has given us a hell of a lot of investment, which has helped us kickstart South Wales and Wales.
It's still matching funding that the Welsh Assembly puts up for certain things. Like, there's an education project happening in Caerphilly, I think.
That's what we look at objectively.
If it ever gets off the ground, it's going to be matched.
We still get other funding from them. So it hasn't completely dried up. It's just, you know, they're obviously spending more money where it's needed. More.
For example, Greece.
Precisely. So, you know, like I said, there's things I'd like to change about the European Union, but, you know, the European Union isn't all bad. It's not the problem. You know, it's not the cause of all our woes.
No. You usually find it's dickheads that are the cause of all of our woes.
That's usually the case.
But very often the dickheads that are finding somebody else to blame are the ones that cause the problem in the first place, or at least contributed.
Yes. So, I hope Greece find some sort of solution soon. It doesn't seem to be the best place in the world. It's very unsettled. And I'm not an economist, so I'm not going to say whether they should be, you know, defaulting, or whether they should, you know, we just got to go with the people who know best, I think. And
hey, come on. Economics is not a science. It's like the philosophy of money. That's all it is. And because all the economists happen to agree on something, doesn't give it any predictive ability, like a science actually would.
But surely there must be some science to economics. You know, there's got to be, there's maths there. There's got to be some kind of a science to it. I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I mean, a lot of it is probably subjective, but there's got to be some science in there. There's got to be an objective way to, you know, tell the difference between a good decision and a bad decision.
Well, I don't pretend to understand it. They've set up ridiculously complex institutions that operate together. And they've got ideas about what might work and might not. And it seems to work, apart from when it screws up and everybody loses their job and can't afford to buy a loaf of bread. So what good have they done then? When everybody else might suggest trying a new system, they'll say, oh no, we've got to stick with this regular capitalism, as free as possible, and then bail out all the banks when everything goes tits up. I want to occupy something.
What are you going to occupy? A pub. I want to occupy a Wetherspoons.
An ass shape in the sofa, just like every other night.
Oh, you've had a donkey in the living room as well, have you? Thank you. I'm here all week. News today of Liz Jones. I don't know if you guys caught this. I'm going to mention it now.
Yeah.
Oh my God, yes.
Apparently, we need to be scared of all middle-aged women because they're spunk-stealing, manipulative bitches who want to get knocked up at any cost. They don't give a toss about you. They're psychopathic in their quest for pregnancy. An amazing revelation by her. And, you know, she's obviously had psychological issues. She may have had some pity off me if she hadn't decided to try and paint most middle-aged women like herself.
Yeah. So, she quoted a baby, crazy gene-stealing witch.
Yeah.
She quoted a 2001 survey that revealed that 42% of women would lie about using contraception in order to get pregnant in spite of their partner's wishes. But the rest of her article suggests that maybe another 23% are lying to the survey and the remaining 35 are lying to themselves. They're all just spunk crazy.
Yeah.
But desperate for children. Oh, yeah, she suggests amongst her friends all of these examples. And yeah, I'm sure it does happen an awful lot. And women can tell the most awful lies. Men can tell dreadful lies like, I'm just going out for one pint. Or,
But let's be honest, going out and having a couple of extra pints isn't going to see you paying maintenance for an extra 18 years, is it?
But
well, it depends.
Sure, it's your baby. I don't think a man's ever said a lie like that.
No.
And these things do happen, and it's dreadful. But she does want to paint every single woman as
it was very sweeping language. You know? I mean, she didn't say she didn't make a statement saying all middle-aged women are doing this, obviously not. No. But her language was very broad.
Yeah, it's a lot of people doing it,
Very all I heard was my own ticking clock, is one of the quotes.
Yeah.
And like, every woman's got that clock, and I was just listening to
tick,
mine.
Tick follows tock, follows tick, follows tock.
Guinness adverts, really. Come on, Steve. But I just think that in her effort to maybe, you know, give people an insight into her own past and her own psyche and the reasons why she is what she is, she's used language that You may use, say you've had too many pints and you're trying to make a point and you make silly broad statements. We all do it.
Yeah.
It's like she must have written the article drunk or something. You know what I'm on about, middle-aged women. We all love the spunk and we all, you know, wring it out of the condom into our uteruses, blah, blah, blah. You know, but really...
Why is she speaking in that slightly weird voice?
Because she's pissed.
Creepy, right?
Because she's pissed. Okay. And that's what she's like.
Haven't you heard the speech, Trev?
Yeah.
No. That was spot on.
No, well, for me, though, I was saying to John earlier, the scariest thing about this for me is the fact that you've got... She's saying, obviously, and we're sort of doubting her assumption, that you've got women out there who are deliberately trapping men into being sperm donors. And then not only are they trapping them into being sperm donors against their wishes, and then going to the CSA to get them to cough up cash for their kids.
And this was what we came closest to as a philosophical question, an ethical question, yeah, wasn't it, Steve? We asked the question of each other, if a woman stole your sperm, in effect, or maybe if she said, lied to you and said she was on the pill when she knew she wasn't because she wanted to get pregnant, and you did get pregnant, are you responsible for that child? And what is your initial reaction, Trev?
Yeah, that's a horribly complicated one. Because
we never said it's going to be easy.
No, but it might be that a woman has already found out that she's likely to be pregnant, so quickly finds some other guy and then has sex with them and says, oh, I think the condom might have burst or something. And you don't know and you think, oh, I definitely don't want to ask this woman for a test to see if this kid is mine, because if it turns out it is, then I'm going to be seen as a crap dad, aren't I? But actually, that's a perfectly reasonable thing for a guy to ask. So there are so many horrible things that get brought up, and the woman is somehow always painted as the victim in situations like that. You know, absolutely. If a guy says, I want a DNA test.
She's saying the complete opposite there, really. She's saying that women manipulate men, go out of their way.
Yeah, it was purely a hypothetical, Trev. I was only asking your opinion on whether
it's kind of like if you went and gave... complex.
No, sure, but if you went and gave, you know, sperm at a sperm bank, and all of a sudden, a few weeks later...
Someone's chasing you for CSA.
You know, should you
absolutely
be held...
Absolutely not, no.
So if it was got through, your sperm was taken through deception...
No, that absolutely relieves you.
Oh, there you go. Well, we all agree on that, then. That's great. Yeah. I know it's complex, and, you know... It's usually made complex by you don't know the truth. That's what.
Yeah, I mean, the difficulty which comes out of that, as we said earlier, is the fact that how do you prove that, you know, it's who's telling the truth or not?
Okay. What I would like to happen now is Trev to get his Catholic story in, and then we'll continue after that.
Well, this is basically not just a Catholic story. It starts off as a Church of England story.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The Anglicans have kicked off to start with. Ooh. Well, they're just mentioned first in the story. But here it is. The Church of England has warned its clergy not to register same-sex relationships following government confirmation that places of worship can host civil partnership ceremonies from next month. Gay and lesbian couples can, from the 5th of December, celebrate their big day in religious premises, opting into a new scheme. But there is no obligation on religious groups to take part in the initiative. This was from Wednesday's Guardian. A spokesman for the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, also reinforced its opposition to the new plans, saying the new provisions were unnecessary, as none of its churches would be used for these purposes. Basically, there's a provision that churches can now be used for same-sex marriages, but there is the option for the church to opt out. And all the churches have said, by the way, we're opting out! Don't do it! Nobody do it! We're all opting out!
I think
which
you'll
they didn't
find
need to
that
say
some,
at all.
Yeah, but I think you'll find that some churches won't opt out and will
yeah,
do it.
Yeah, yeah. Because, they'll have a captive audience. I mean, if you think about it, you're catering to what is a significant minority. I might actually start up a church now, come to think of it. You're gonna have loads.
John's big gay church.
Big, it's gonna be so big and gay. It's gonna be the most
feather boas, pink.
It's going to be the best decorated church ever.
Liza Minnelli on loop.
It's gonna be so.
Any more stereotypes we can come up with?
No.
A glitter crucifix. Come on.
You've got to have a disco ball in the middle as well. You know, you go in the Catholic churches and they've got these big candles and incense. And just this glitter ball, you know. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
You can have some high-grade weed in the... I can't remember the names of those things. The smoking things that the Catholics walk up and down with.
It's called the thurible.
Thank you very much. I thought you were saying furball. You can thurible. Picture my confusion. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, well, did you see the game show?
No.
No, I know you haven't. No. You told me earlier.
Yeah, but our viewers didn't know that, did they? So our viewers, listeners didn't know that.
It was good. It's worth watching. If you haven't seen it already, the first one in the series, which was about, what was it again? What was it called?
I switched off, I got bored.
Yeah, I didn't like it, the first one. It was rubbish. However, the game show is a psychological tour de force. And I think it's very interesting to see in light of the riots and what happened in London and mob mentality and things like that. You should watch it, because if it happens as is shown on the show and Darren makes his usual statement, he says everything you're about to see is what happened. There is a proviso, but you know, you'll find out at the end it's not a game changer. If it happens as he said, I think it explains a lot about the riots, and it leads, you know, it's not as simple as these are all criminals out, you know, causing trouble, but there's something else at work there, and it's psychological. So if you got time, go and check it out on, is it 4OD it's going to be on or whatever?
4OD, yeah.
Go check it out.
Oh, and I'd like to recommend Origins of Us, a three-part documentary about evolution. It's just finished, actually, but it'll be on iPlayer almost certainly. I'm watching it on my Sky Planner at the moment. It's almost got that horrible thing of not enough density of information, you know, stretched out over the hour. But it just about manages to get away with that.
Oh.
And so far, it's quite fascinating.
I've got another recommendation for people. If you've heard of Philosophy Bites, if you haven't, it's an interesting website where they post short 10-minute podcasts where they interview a philosopher of some standing. And it's quite old now. It's back in July, but I've only just caught up with the feed. They interview Victor Tadros on punishment, and this is quite interesting in light of some of the Facebook conversations I've had with Stephen and Jamie about the concept of punishment and deserving of punishment, you know, why should we punish people, etc. And it hits upon pretty much every theme that I mentioned. So check it out. It's on philosophybytes.com.
That's the homework for the listeners. If you all listen to that, then we'll all do that, and we can argue about it when we get back.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And also, this week, the most recent Philosophy Bytes podcast is on moral relativism, which I think is another very interesting one worth listening to, Steve. Especially in light of one of the very first podcasts we did when we were talking about biblical slavery and things like that. It's very interesting. So that's me pimping stuff for this week. Anyone else got anything to add before we wrap up?
I'm done.
Cool. Well, on that bombshell...
I'm done, I'm out of stuff. I'm just bored now. Sat here scratching myself.
Thanks very much. I'm sure I'll remember lots of stories we didn't talk about because I've seen so much stuff this week. But never mind, we'll save it for next week. Thanks very much for listening, people. From me, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.